This is How to Business in Show Business, where we talk about the business of show, the podcast that discusses ways to work smarter, not harder. If you're a performer at the beginning of your career or a student interested in going into the performing arts, this is the podcast for you. For more about the podcast, you can find our website at businessandshowbusiness.com. There you can learn more about the business of performing arts with coursework, videos with shop talk, and interviews with other professional performers. Now here's your host, Corben.
Hello, I'm your host, Corben, and welcome back to another episode of How to Business and Show Business. Before we get started, go ahead and click that subscribe button so you can stay caught up anytime there's a new episode. Actors, thank you for joining me for another episode. I'm really looking forward to diving into this conversation with you as we sit down and talk with Annie Schiffman. Annie, who is also a performer herself, she is the idea and CEO behind Downstage Media, which is her company. They deal in social media marketing for the performing arts. And before I continue, let me just read you the mission statement. Performing arts organizations have a hard time getting people to consistently show up. At Downstage Media, we believe that involved audiences make the arts better. Our social media services help reach and organize and energize, audiences so that companies can create works that spread empathy, compassion, and joy. In part one of our conversation with Annie, we're going to talk about how and when Downstage Media came to be back in 2010. We're going to talk about her cutting her teeth, putting in the time and effort into her baby, her idea that is Downstage Media. We're going to talk about ways that you can implement being the Roy to your Walt Disney as an artist and advocating for yourself. And we're talking about also in part one how even if you choose to step away from performing arts, it will come up and develop in other ways. So here's part one of that conversation with Annie Schiffman.
Who is Annie Schiffman?
Are you asking me rhetorically or are you going to like, because I'm happy to answer. I'm very familiar with the answer.
Well, Okay. So sometimes when I ask people this, they go, well, do you want professional, private, the beginning, middle? I said, however you want to answer it, what is your journey? What's your titles? What do you feel as though encompasses who you are?
Well, I am an award-winning content creator and actress. Mm-hmm. I started a company a few years back called Downstage Media, which is all about helping artists and people in the performing arts get more people to show up. And nowadays, that because as we're recording this, we're still in the midst of the pandemic. So that oftentimes means getting people to show up online. But I mostly help people out with their online presence to help boost their offline presence and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm a mom, I'm an artist, I'm a business owner, and I'm very happy to be talking to you and to your audience.
Oh, thank you. Being said, I do find this interesting because I feel like we are many things. What is a hobby and or interest that you have outside of show business?
Okay. This one's super specific.
Okay.
I love knowing who are the songwriters for pop songs.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I'm a huge musical theater geek, right? So yeah. I like to know who are the composers, who writes the music and lyrics. But now that there's so much crossover in mm-hmm. pop with musical theater, and also my dad was in radio. So when we were kids, we always had to listen to the radio stations that my dad was in charge of. Mm-hmm. And so I just listened to a ton of pop music. I've always loved pop music. And so now I like to see, well, who wrote that song, you know, like
yeah.
when you have like a big, huge, sweeping song, like it's all coming back to me now, like the Celine Dion song, right?
Yeah.
So that song is like 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's not that surprising. It was written by the same guy who wrote Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which is also a song that's like 6 or 7 minutes long, you know? So it's like, I just find it so interesting that when you can see those sort of crossovers and things like that. And my husband's a songwriter. And so I love knowing who the writers are of the songs.
Wait, complete side note. I can't pass over that. So, being that your father worked in radio, do you think that's informed you musically?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we just always had music on. There was always music on in the house. And it was usually so my dad what so I grew up in New Jersey. I live in New Jersey now. And my dad started a radio station that was so popular in New York City that then they created the same format all around the country. This idea of light FM, which is basically like songs you could listen to at work, it wasn't too hard, or blah, blah, blah. So when I was a kid, that was Lionel Richie and Barbara Streisand and Neil Diamond and just the big people from the 80s and 90s, Lionel Richie. So I just listened to those songs all the time. Like there was no option. Like that was what we listened to. And I absolutely think that it influenced me because I know so many of those songs backwards and forwards that when I was performing, I don't perform anymore, but when I was performing and I was improvising music, I had innately a sense of how melody worked and how it would work in a song. So, yeah.
See, I'm always jealous of that because as a dancer first, my musicality comes in a different way. And so as that translates to singing, I'm envious of those who just have a melodic ear or who can harmonize or who music, you can tell when people's I guess how would they say? Like, how would they position themselves first in terms of showbiz, being an actor, singer, dancer, singer, actor, whatever. I'm always envious of those who have that musical. Anyways, I digress. I digress. So speaking of which, you said that you're a performer, which you still are a performer. Like, it never ends.
It doesn't. I just find it comes out in other ways now. It comes out a lot on Twitter for me. Like I feel like the one-liners that I probably would have put in a show, I am now just simply putting it out on Twitter. It's sort of like I feel like it needs to go somewhere. Or for me, it will be that I am creating videos. I'm crafting stories that way and what I'm telling to help other performers get better. But yeah, I think you're right. At first, when I started downstage and I stopped performing professionally, I really felt like I needed to have that break. But because of talking to you and other people, it is sort of realizing that you're always an artist. You're all that you can't, I can't turn it off. Like even if I wanted to, I can't. So I'm always going to be more theatrical than, I live in a town that there's a lot of like bankers and pharmaceutical people. And I feel like whenever they're like around me and my husband, and because my husband, I should say my husband is Rob Shipman. He's a musician and an improviser, but for you listeners. But yeah, I feel like they're always like, what do you guys do? I just feel like it's so interesting. You guys are doing stuff.
Well,
Like we're just like very colorful people.
the normal 9 to 5 is so interesting because it's not show business. And I always find the 9 to 5 man or just not show business more fascinating than show business. But then I know they're saying the same thing about me. And it's like, oh, wait, what do you do? Are you tour for your life? Like, I don't know. It's just interesting. And having been back home, or at least when you're hearing this, listeners, having been back home due to Rona, right? And having done a 9 to 5, I'm just like, I have a lot more respect for the 9 to 5 man. Like, and then you take off to then come see me perform. Like, dude, I commend you, or ma'am, I commend you, because it is not for the faint of heart, shall we say, but grateful nonetheless. And I know you mentioned it now, but can we wind it back to 2010? And please correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes the internet is false, but when I went and looked on your website, you were talking about you were doing an event, and then all of a sudden it dawned on you. Well, I don't know if it dawned on you right away, but just social media, another way to advertise. Can you talk about that realization?
So because this is like an acting audience, you guys are going to get this. So I was in a show that was performing off Broadway called Chicago City Limits. It was one of the longest running improv shows in New York. And at the time, it was the only paying improv show in New York, which is insane. And it's still pretty insane to me that so much improv does not pay, but whatever. So anyway, Chicago City Limits had such a big run, you know, in a long time ago in the 80s, 20 years before I was there, there were, Robin Williams would step in and pop in. And, you know, there was a huge buzz around the company. And the ownership just, they knew how to, they knew the show that they wanted to do, and they didn't know how to market it. And so because of that, we would oftentimes have the rule where if there were more people on stage than in the audience, we would cancel the show. And there were four people on stage, and we would oftentimes cancel the show. So it showed me how clear it could happen if you just didn't market. And so, and it was demoralizing. It was really, really awful. I know that the producers of that show were doing the best that they could, but there's only, you know, like with anyone, there's only so much that you could do. And it just wasn't their big focus in getting people to see this show, which was really, really hard. However, because they had such a name, we got invited. We would oftentimes get invited to do corporate stuff. And that really wound up being the bread and butter. So we would go, and this was for the information technology company called Cisco. Sometimes you'll see it on like fancy business office phones. I think it's CISCO. Anyway, they were having their big, big meeting, and Twitter had just started. And there was this guy named Chris Brogan, who's an early mentor of mine, but this, I hadn't heard of him before at this point. And he was speaking before we were about to perform on stage at this gig and like do some improv and keep it fun and keep it light and keep the audience engaged. But he had been speaking about how you could use this thing called Twitter to get the word out about your business and how other businesses were using it. Twitter and Pinterest, those were the two I remembered he talked about. So I was backstage and I was like, guys, we could be using this for our show. Like, we could be using this tool. And I was scribbling notes on the back of my script because I thought this could be the way that we do things. And now that show, again, the producers at the time, they just weren't ready. They weren't ready for that kind of a thing. But I started learning everything I could about social media. I started goofing around with it, playing around with it, making a ton of mistakes, creating blogs, like just all this kind of stuff. And also around that time, my first daughter was born. So I wasn't able to get out as much. I wasn't able to get to as many auditions or as many rehearsals. And during nap times and bedtimes, I just started learning as much as I could and realizing that theaters and performing arts organizations could use this tool that is predominantly free. And that could really change how the word gets out about your show. Because until then, it was buying postcards, it was buying airtime on radio and airtime on TV and ad space in magazines. And so then all of a sudden there was this entryway into anyone and everyone. And that got me excited. And I really liked that aspect of it. So then I just decided to learn as much about it as I could. And then because I knew so much, then other people said, well, hey, can you help? You know, I've got a book coming out. I've got a show that I'm premiering. Can you just help us? Can you help us do some of the social media stuff? And so then that's sort of where it all started, though, was that kernel of an idea, just listening to that person speak at a conference and getting the idea of it.
I guess it'd be fair to say that this was a part of cutting your teeth in those early stages. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Cutting my teeth, making a ton of mistakes with, you know, what kind of posts, how often to post them, even stuff. And I think because this is the business of show business, even all of that kind of thing, like how do you negotiate a contract? What are the different parameters? What is the scope that you put on it? Right. Yeah. Because all of that stuff you need to think about as artists. Mm-hmm. You always want to lead with your craft first, right? You always want to be like, oh, I'm so excited to share all of this stuff that I do. And I want to share, and we'll just work out the money and we'll work out the details later. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had to invert my thinking. That wasn't going to work anymore. And so I realized a lot of things like, oh no, you need to define how many posts you're going to do for people, or you need to define, like, make sure they understand that just because you post this video, it's not necessarily going to go viral. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, all of that kind of stuff. And especially at the beginning, because, and I even think to an extent now, it's very interesting to me that social media and American Idol happened around the same time. Because as artists, we look at American Idol winners or contestants, and we know how that sets the needle in the haystack. We know that's not really how it works. And on the flip side, producers, directors, people who would hire me to do their social media, they would want things to go viral. And I would be like, that's the American Idol version of social media. Most of the time, it's just trucking along. It's building up your following. It's doing that stuff that you don't think that you're going to have to do. It's answering every single comment that comes through. It's, you know, it's giving out a lot of information first and then asking for the sale second in such a way, or not being too salesy, you know, like all of that kind of stuff. You really had to teach people. And I felt like the American Idol example was helpful for the theater world, because every artist was like, it is not like that. That is not how you become famous. Like, or at least it's not how you become a working actor or, you know, a working singer. So yeah, I find that very interesting.
Well, and you just tapped on it. And before we press on more into the advice section, being two in one, you know, not all of us are fortunate to have be the Walt and be the Roy Disney. So being the two in the one, is it, because as you just said, having to switch your brain to be like, no, I got to take care of business first before I, because we, you know, we do love the art and we do love the, no, we'll just work it out later. Is it easy to do? Is it something that's second nature to most, it, or as it pertains to you and how you feel about it going in? Is it something that you feel is lacking sometimes as us, as artists, having to advocate for ourselves when we don't have that representation or that partner?
It's absolutely lacking. Yeah. I think that we don't realize all the stuff that we do. But when you actually make a list as the performer, or for me, like, what are the things that I'm being asked to do for this client? You are then taken so much more seriously when you have a clear sense of what it is that you do. And you don't have to be a jerk about it, right? So a lot of times what I will do is I'll have it written up ahead of time, make sure that everyone agrees on what they're getting into and what the cost is. And if the cost doesn't come at a certain time, then what is the penalty for that? So everyone knows stuff right off the bat. Here's a little quick thing I learned from a friend of mine. His name is Sean Ely, and he runs the YouTube show Number Six with Cheese, which has over 50,000 subscribers, that when you get hired to do stuff, put in your invoice that there will be a 15% late fee added on to anything not paid after 30 days. That is, has been amazing advice.
Yeah.
For the, and because now I did, because then you always have the option, right? So obviously when the pandemic hit, I had a bunch of clients who just couldn't pay me on time. Right. And so then you look like the bigger person, which you are being the bigger person by saying, I'm going to waive this fee for you, right? Or there's times where you're going to need that money because you need to keep the lights on, or you need to stay in your apartment or whatever it is. And so then you say, I'm going to have to, I have it in my invoice that you agreed upon, blah, blah, blah. Also with scope, when you have a list of the things that you are and you aren't willing to do, you can always say to people, you know what, that's outside my scope. That's outside what we've already agreed upon. Let me just, I'm going to send you a change form for you to fill out. And just so that way we could both agree upon it. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about that is when you send people that change form that you've created, they don't want to get involved in that kind of administrative stuff over and over and over again. So they won't keep adding stuff outside of your scope. It's sort of, you're sort of teaching them like, look, you've paid me for this. I will consider doing some other stuff, but it's outside of what we've already agreed upon. So we're going to have to like figure out a different fee or whatever. So if you could just fill this form out. And so then they're like, I don't want to freaking fill out a form. And so then they usually don't ask you to do stuff outside your scope, or they do, right? If you make it easy enough for them. Mm-hmm. But I think just if nothing else, that mentality for artists is super helpful. Mm-hmm. So just things like, you know, if they're asking you to stay for a little bit of a later rehearsal or stuff like that, that you have that agency to say, you know what, this is not past what we said we were going to do. I'm going to try to make it work, but I can't guarantee I can make it work. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you want to make sure that you're letting them know that they're asking more of you than you've both agreed upon. And you may have some other stuff going on, right? Like right. For me, a lot of it was a babysitter. So then after a while, it's like, well, if I stay an extra hour, that means that I now got to pay the babysitter an extra hour. So that's another bit of money that I'm losing from my paycheck. Am I willing to make that decision? Mm-hmm. You know, or does that mean I'm going to miss the next train home because I, you know, I live in New Jersey and I've got to take the train home from Manhattan, you know, like just different things like that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like artists need to empower themselves more to know what's being asked of them and whether or not that's what's been signed on for. By the way, I also say like that producers should make it very clear with their, in writing with their actors, if they're planning on having them do social media for them. So producers, I mean, you are being hired as the actor to do the show. You're not necessarily being hired as the actor to help them out on Instagram or to build their Facebook following. That is not your job. So just make sure that if you're being asked to do this stuff, because it's still the Wild West.
Yeah.
When it comes to this, just say to them, you know, I'm even if they don't bring it up, you could bring it up like, I just want to let you know, I'm so excited to make this project work. I am happy to do one Instagram takeover for you. I'm happy to share two or three posts a week. Like, figure out what that is that you feel comfortable with. Yeah. And let them know that ahead of time. Yeah. Or if they have it in their clause, you know, if they have it in the thing that you're signing, then that's fine. But they're going to ask you to do social for them. And so you just have to figure out what you feel comfortable with.
Can I piggyback off and ask this question then? Because I know that there are some theaters that I don't remember if it was written in the contract, but you know, via other shows that they've done, and this is what they've advertised, their Instagram takeovers. So if you know that's coming up, and if you know that it's something you'd like to do, because as far as I've been blessed with, to have the option of like, hey, if anybody wants to do it, here's the list. And so they put it in our hands to do. Otherwise, then they'll do it themselves. Would the same rule still apply?
What do you mean, here's the list? Tell me more.
So, for instance, when I did Paper Mill Playhouse, which was an amazing experience.
We're just in New Jersey.
And I would do it again in a heartbeat. I know that they are famously known for their Instagram takeovers. And so that I knew it would be a chance that might come up, that if they presented like, hey guys, we're doing your Instagram takeover from this time to this time during the holiday season. If anybody would like to do it, here's a list, and we will go in chronological order and we will select dates and times if you want. So would the same rule still apply?
Yes, because I mean, because they're giving you the option.
I see.
Right. And so then you're able to put yourself forward if you like.
I see.
It's when I have seen things turn ugly when it's like, well, you don't really look, you're not really being a team player by not helping out with the social. Ooh. You know, like I've seen that happen from both sides of things, and it can, and I just think it's important. And I keep always reminding the producers or the people on the marketing team, like they're just being hired to perform the show. So if you're asking them to do other stuff, then you just recognize that's going above and beyond what they've been hired to do. So I like that, you know, that actors can come forward and say, I'm so excited to help you out. These are my social media things. Feel free to tag me. I'll do my best to share some stuff that you guys post, all of that, you know. So I just think it's important for you personally, just like what you would if you were, you know, like with intimacy coaches or things like that, like you just have to know what you feel comfortable with, because they may ask you and you need to know what the answer is, or they may not ask you and you need to know how you feel about it. If it's something that it's like, well, you're just going to do this, right? Well, I don't know, you know, so just make those decisions ahead of time for different projects. Mm.
Makes sense. Nope. Spot on. Spot on. How do you, as we transition into our next set of questions, how do you personally business and show business? And in that, what lesson was your saving grace?
So how I business in show business and what has been my saving grace? I think that I have been very shaped by what I didn't learn going to Tisch, right? I learned so much about the craft of performing, but I didn't know a lot about being a professional actor, which is why I love this podcast and I love the whole idea of it. But how I business in show business is I realize that it is a business and that you have to think of it as a business. You have to think of yourself as the product. You have to think of yourself as the brand. And so I'm all oftentimes thinking about that and setting up those boundaries of where I, like, what is professional, what is private. But I like to let people know that when they're working with me, it's not just that I'm someone who, like, oh no, like, I'm really good at social media, so like, if you want to hire me, I'm happy to do it. It's that, no, I've studied this, I've learned this, and I'm going to take you through these steps, and I'm acting like a professional. And I don't mean like pretending, but like I'm actually carrying myself as the professional that I am. Because I think it's important people recognize that it is a business. It is absolutely a business. And we need it as artists. Like, we, our mortgage relies on it. Our kids rely on it. So it is a business and you have to treat it as that. If you, and I find that so many artists absolutely, and this is what, this was a big thing for me as when I was in my 20s and I was learning, I was so craving people accepting me and my work that when I would have my day jobs at places and they were so happy with me because, you know, I was a capable person, right? I would get so involved in my day job, either at the restaurant that I was working with, or eventually I worked at the Container Store for a while, you know, like just all those different jobs. I realized that I was getting too emotionally invested and putting too much in those jobs and not enough into my art and my career. So I felt like it was really important to do that, like to really start to say, no, this is a job. I'm not going to take this thing that pays me a little bit of money because I have a bigger picture. So I think that's important too, like knowing when to say no. But I guess to wrap up that question, like how I business and show business is being absolutely a professional first and realizing and respecting that this is a business.
You just said it, knowing your product and your brand. I talk about this in a future episode, breaking that down. And I think that's so important before you walk into the room, knowing, because I think there's a difference between all three, your product, your type, and your brand. As it pertains to you, and you just said it, like being professional, this is a real job. I bring not formality, what's the word I'm looking for? I bring substance to the table when we're in this meeting, when we're in this conversation for the services that you're asking. And you just said it in school, is there a lack of knowing the product and type and brand before being released out into the professional world? Because I mean, how can you at 16 or how can you at 21 that you're really young?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know because I haven't been in college. It's going to be the 20th reunion this year from when I graduated from NYU. So I'm not really that clear now on how things are being taught. But from what I've seen and from what I understand is that people are leaving these organizations not knowing that they need to know, like not knowing even what the questions are. So knowing that, like you're saying, your product, your brand, your type, right? Now you don't have to make those decisions at 21.
No.
But it is good to know, oh yeah. Like, because I remember I actually was able to use some connections that I had when I was in my early 20s, and I got a one-on-one meeting with Bernie Telsey. Like that's a pretty big deal, right? And I didn't even know it was such a big deal at the time, right? But it was a big deal. And so I had just come out of NYU. I had just studied acting and directing and musical theater and film and television. And so Bernie Telsey says to me, like, what kind of stuff are you interested in doing? And I was like, I don't know. I'm interested in doing everything. And he was like, well, but I don't know what to do with you then, right? Like when you want to do everything that you don't know anything. So, or like, it's not clear, right? It's not clear for a casting director who wants to put you in a certain spot. And I feel like at 21, you don't necessarily have to know what it is, but it is helpful to know that when you can figure that out, it may help you go in the direction that you want to go in. So once I realized, oh, I'm funny, I'm very witty, I found my way in improv, and then I knew, like, okay, not only am I the funny best friend, but I can improvise stuff. So that's when I got a commercial agent. That's when I started getting to auditions. That's when all of that stuff started really coming together once I owned that, but I didn't know that I was supposed to have figured that out ahead of time. So I feel like that would be a helpful thing to know, or just even that, like, you may not know how you're going to make survival money, but you're gonna need to make survival money. And here's how you can save it. Mm. Here's how you can organize your money. And by the way, I highly recommend that all artists read the book Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. It's all about how businesses can set up their money. And I think it absolutely would be helpful for every artist to do. So when you get a check that comes in, you set a little bit aside for your taxes, and you set a little bit aside for, you set a little bit aside for a rainy day. You set a little bit aside for your headshots and, you know, all that, those kinds of expenses you're going to have, how much money it costs to put up your website. And then you set a little bit of money aside to just pay yourself, right? But Profit First by Mike Michalowicz is a great book for that. So yeah, I don't think that artists are being taught it enough. I think that they're being taught, like, well, you're probably, like, you know, you're probably going to starve, but there's beauty in that. It's like, no,
there's not. That's a lie.
There's not. Because let me tell you, I live in a town where there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of bankers and stuff, and there's beauty in some of those cars they're driving. I'll tell you that.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you're notified when a new episode is posted. Rate and review this podcast, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on next week's episode of How to Business in Show Business.